Live from the Polish Club in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Ashbury Heights.
I live in the Mission District.
The Mission District, just a couple blocks away from here.
That's right. We're bringing you our very first live performance of Cross Currents at the Polish Club in San Francisco's Mission District. Last Saturday night, a live audience got to hear stories on the theme of beginnings and endings. From the endangered sounds of the ends of the earth.
It was really quite loud.
To the beginning of womanhood, memorialized in the Kitchen Sisters' Hidden World of Girls series.
One of the parts of my Amazon princess training was learning how to ride bareback.
And a love that knows no end.
I made a heart for her the night before she passed.
Coming up, live Cross Currents.
Welcome everybody to KALW's MAP event. Thanks a lot for coming to join us on a Saturday night. It's really great to see such a full house. We are ecstatic.
This past weekend, KALW hosted a multimedia storytelling event with the Mission Arts and Performance Project of San Francisco, or the MAP. That's an artist collective that puts together an evening of free art and performance in the heart of the Mission District every 2 months. This event was also special because KALW is celebrating our 70th year on the air. So we went big. We invited some of the best storytellers in the Bay, including the host of NPR's Snap Judgment, Glenn Washington, John Richmond from the local comedy troupe Casper Hauser, and writer for the New York Times and pop-up magazines, John Muellem. The National Oral History Project StoryCorps was there recording interviews, and KALW team members, including Julie Kane and Casey Miner, were also in the mix, with many stories synced to photos and videos. And our ambition didn't stop there. We decided to do something we had never done before, a live edition of Cross Currents. The theme of the night was beginnings and endings.
Okay, it starts off a dark stage and then a beam of light.
Chapter one, in the beginning.
It's beginning.
I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
He's beginning to believe.
Every great journey begins with a single footstep.
Begin, commence, start moving.
Places, please, the dance is about to begin.
And that's the end of that chapter.
Well, there you have it, folks. Another happy ending from the good people at Jimmy James Incorporated.
I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here tell you how it's going to begin.
This is the end.
And that's the end of that chapter.
This ends now!
And now I present our very first live edition of Cross Currents. Here's your host, Ben Trefney.
We're going to start today's show by heading to the end of the world. And we're taking you with us so you can hear what it sounds like. Here's KALW's Martina Castro with this installment of our award-winning series of conversations with creative people who work in sound. It's called The Audiophiles.
You hear that?
Can you hear me?
It's incredible.
When I imagine Antarctica, I think of an empty space, big expanses of ice, few if any people on the entire continent. In my mind, it's a quiet place. But it turns out, it's not. That's a colony of Adelie penguins with their chicks. That's an elephant seal taking a nap. And then, of course, there's the sound of the ice itself.
I was surprised how noisy it was there.
That's local composer and instrument maker Cheryl Leonard. Back in 2009, she recorded these sounds on a trip she took to Palmer Station. That's a laboratory off the Antarctic Peninsula.
Because it was the summer and it was the peninsula, so it's on the coast, and there's a lot of wildlife, and all the wildlife is frantically trying to reproduce in the short summer.
Oh, so that's why it's so noisy.
So there are lots of bird sounds, lots of sounds from different kinds of seals, lots of whales that visited us. And then you have all the sounds of the ice melting. So the ice from the glacier next to the station constantly falling off into the ocean, making these huge thunderous sounds. the little pieces of ice floating on the ocean, clinking and clunking and popping as they melt. It was really quite loud.
Okay, I'm convinced Antarctica is noisy. That sound you just heard is of ice calving. That's the term for when large chunks of a glacier or iceberg break off. To record something like that, Cheryl had to climb on top of cliffs and icebergs, and she told me crazy stories of almost losing her microphone when a gust of wind blew it from where it was perched on a cliff. She had to deal with very intense weather, and not all the animals around her were as cute as they sound. Take the leopard seals.
They could do mean things to you. They're quite large.
Like how big?
Big. Bigger, longer than the boat.
What? I'm sorry. The boat is how long?
Yes. I think they were about 12 feet or something. The big ones.
12 feet. Imagine one of those trying to jump in the boat with you. Not so cute. Here's the story behind Cheryl's favorite sound.
One day I got to go out on the glacier and get lowered into a crevasse, which is a big crack in the glacier. And inside the crevasse, because it was summer and it was melting, were all of these icicles, just like thousands of icicles. You could tap them and they'd each have a pitch.
If you hit them too hard, they'd fall off.
But the sound of them falling into the depths of the crevasse and bouncing off other icicles was really neat.
Wait for it. That's it. Now, all these sounds of ice make this place seem really, really cold, but
it wasn't really that cold. I have to say, I went to the warmest part of Antarctica in the austral summer, so temperatures were usually around freezing. It's kind of like going to Lake Tahoe in the winter here. It really wasn't that bad.
But the elements there were still no joke. Cheryl would ride around with guides and another artist in a little Zodiac, and storms could catch them out on the water at a moment's notice.
Well, one of the pieces I've written from Antarctica is called Greater Than 20 Knots, which is referring to the wind speed. If the wind speed was greater than 20 knots, you were not allowed to go out in a boat at the station.
So what you're hearing right now is that piece of Cheryl's music inspired by the wind.
So the weather and the wind really defines what your life is like there, what you can and can't do. There are days you don't even want to leave the station, or it's totally unsafe to leave the station. And in our sort of modern urban lives, we're pretty disconnected from that. So it's just interesting to live within those confines.
You should know you're not hearing actual recordings of the wind. This piece was created with instruments that Cheryl made from materials she gathered while she was in Antarctica. Her home studio is covered with these objects.
So these are some slabs of rock from Antarctica, from an island called Breaker Island. So I call them the Breaker Slabs. And I chose them because they each have a different pitch and you could play a nice melody with them.
Believe it or not, she's making this sound by taking one rock and just dragging it over another. It's one of a few peculiar methods of playing this rock instrument. She also tickles them.
So you can kind of tickle the little rocks and they wobble back and forth and it makes a nice sound. And it's funny.
Yeah, it's really funny. Then there's this instrument she calls the octobone,
which is 8 penguin bones. Played with feathers. I also have a little mobile thing made out of penguin vertebrae. The sound they make, it's very subtle and quiet, but it's very similar to some of the sounds that the ice made.
And finally, the one called the limpet shell spine,
which is 10 Antarctic limpet shells, played by bowing and brushing with feathers.
So you might be wondering how Cheryl hears music in these sounds. I asked her that question. This is what she had to say.
For me, it, it relates to going out in nature and exploring the world and seeing what's out there. In a similar way, I can take a small object from nature and look at that as a little microcosm and explore what you can get out of that shell. What kinds of worlds could you create sonically with a sound from a limpet shell or something?
Cheryl says if you take the time to listen, everything has a sound. The trees, the grass. Now, whether it's interesting or not, that's a different story.
One of the things that I'm very interested in sound is subtle changes in sound, that what we call timbre. So what kind of sound is it? Is it very pure? Is it sort of more of a gritty sound? Is it an airy, breathy sound? So those kinds of changes in texture really fascinate me.
When I asked Cheryl what she's come to appreciate since she returned from Antarctica, I wasn't surprised by her answer.
How important quiet is, and how much we don't have that in our lives normally.
As you just heard, it's not exactly quiet in Antarctica. The sounds there are of life happening, but we don't know for how long. It's been losing ice since at least 2002 and losing more of it every year. Some species there are also endangered, which means that as time goes on, the kinds of sounds Cheryl recorded will become increasingly rare. She's simultaneously documenting the sounds of life in Antarctica and of it slowly disappearing. For Cross Currents, I'm Martina Castro.
Cheryl Leonard is here tonight. You can find her out in the lobby, and she'd love to talk with you. You can check out her instruments, and she is there here at the Polish Club, where we are broadcasting live and online as well at klwnews.org. On klwnews.org, you can check out all the other installations in our award-winning series, The Audiophiles. You're listening to Cross Currents, live from the Polish Club in San Francisco's Mission District. I'm Ben Trefney, and now we're going to move from the icy terrain of the Antarctic to the hot open plains of the African savanna. Close your eyes and picture this. Above you, there are endless stretches of blue sky. You might hear an elephant in the distance. And somewhere nearby, a pride of lions is resting from the blistering midday sun. Life teems all around you and under you. Termites, they're an often overlooked part of the ecosystem here, but if you peer into a termite mound, you'll find a world filled with nonstop activity and purpose. The hustling and bustling that surrounds the king and queen termites, it goes on, but they sit side by side, creating an astonishing burst of life.
So this little male king sits next to this enormous female that can be several inches long, a ghastly thing, even an entomologist like myself, who loves all creatures equally, is pretty startled when he sees a termite queen.
That's Mark Moffat. This is Lisa Marcinelli.
Her skin is stretched and translucent. Her body keeps pulsating. And you can see this horrific juice bubbling underneath the surface. The babies begin to tend the queen. They feed her. They clean her. She sweats this exudate that has to be licked off continuously. They carry away the eggs, stack them in little piles, and tend them until the little termites hatch. Gradually, she gives birth to this whole mound of termites.
The clip you just heard was produced by the Kitchen Sisters in collaboration with Nathan Dalton. And with me today is one of the famous radio-producing sisters. It's Nikki Silva. Welcome. Welcome to Live Cross Currents, Nikki.
It's so great to be here. I love KALW.
Oh, well, thanks. We love you, too. So the clip that we just heard was from a piece that you produced called The Secret Life of the Termite Queen. So we're wondering, Why'd you choose Termite Queens?
Well, Mother's Day was approaching, and it was Lisa Marganelli, the last woman that you heard, and we'd heard her talk about the Termite Queen, and I think it was the line that she said about the Termite Queen laying an egg every 3 seconds for 15 years that sort of captivated our imagination. And we were working on the hidden world of girls. And it just seemed like the thing to do. We had to kind of look further into this phenomena, deep into this termite world where the queen is sequestered away and never sees the light of day. Is she happy? Is what's happening down there? We wanted to find out.
She really is. Babies every 3 seconds.
Every 3 seconds for 15 years.
Oh, it sounds painful. So your series, the Hidden World of Girls, it's mostly more about people, right? And it's about girls coming of age, and it's about the different rites of passage that they might have. It's about women who are blazing trails and finding their way. I'd like you to tell me about some of the stories that are in that series.
Well, the stories really kind of come from all over the world, from Yemen and Jamaica and Ireland. And one story that we did about Timbuktu, a woman from Timbuktu, from a singing group called Tartit. She was talking with Davia and sort of talking about the different rituals of girls cutting their hair at a certain age. And then Davia asked her, well, what's the hidden world of a Tuareg girl? And she said, well, when you don't love a person anymore, you must leave him. And actually, the more times a woman is divorced, the more beautiful she becomes and the more desirable. And in fact, the women, the Tuareg women, have a big party when they get divorced. And in fact, the divorce party is bigger than the wedding party. And I think then we kind of knew we were onto something with that particular story. We did a story about traveler girls in Ireland, and the travelers are the gypsies of Ireland. They're not Romas, but they're similar. They're an ethnic group, all of their own in Ireland. They're very discriminated against and have had sort of a hard time. They travel in caravans, and historically, things are changing. But we did a piece about the girls, and in talking with several girls, it seems like the big thing of childhood is just imagining your wedding and building up to your wedding and being in weddings. And your wedding is like the ultimate. It's big. Everything is big. The dress is big with 50-foot trains, and you have a horse and carriage. You have anything you want for your wedding. So just following these kinds of different ideas about weddings and divorce was pretty surprising. Sandy Tolan, we worked with producers all over the country. And
you and Davia Nelson,
my fellow kitchen sister. And other producers sent us stories. And Sandy Tolan sent us material from the West Bank and material for a piece called The Speed Sisters about Palestinian race car drivers, women who race against men. And this was sort of really interesting. They're eight of these women. They often wear full gowns and veils and race against the men, which is pretty unheard of.
That seems like a kind of a handicap if they have to wear that.
It does.
What do the men wear?
I'm not exactly sure.
And probably not veils.
Probably not veils. And they drive their own cars, which is interesting. The women really treasure their golf and sort of spiff it up and clean it and love it. So that was interesting. And then we did a piece about horses, unicorns, and dolphins.
Well, what was that? That's not even such a hidden world of girls, really. I mean, that's just kind of something of a world of girls. I had a 9-year-old daughter myself.
That's what we sort of were hearing
about
girls,
yeah,
and horses and unicorns and dolphins. I mean, it was kind of interesting how we'd heard a lot about girls and horses, of course. And then we were interviewing a marine biologist, and she said that she was getting love letters from girls about dolphins and how they wanted to swim with the dolphins. And actually, dolphins were like the horses of the sea. And we sort of began to put it together. And then, of course, unicorns came up, because unicorns are like the horses of the imagination. And so we went out and we sort of tried this idea out on some girls who loved horses. And sure enough, they almost all wanted to swim with the dolphins, had swum with the dolphins, and had sort of long histories of unicorn play. And
well, we have a clip that we'd like to play from one of those stories about unicorns, dolphins, and such. Seth, can you hit that?
My name is Leah Creatura. For me, a lot of the horse phase was that I wanted to be an Amazon princess because I wanted to be Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman. One of the parts of my Amazon princess training was learning how to ride bareback. I was going to a Y camp. I was very discouraged because they didn't really understand about the Amazon princess training. They would not let me learn how to shoot archery on the horse.
To have a place where what it means to be a girl is to be courageous and strong and the only one able to do this impossible task, it's the girl who can ride the horse. It's the girl who's Wonder Woman. It's the girl who tames the unicorn.
That's from The Hidden World of Girls. My name is Ben Trefney. I'm talking with Nikki Silva from the Kitchen Sisters. You're listening to Live Cross Currents. So from termite queens to unicorns, horses, and dolphins, how did you end up choosing the different stories in this series? I mean, they're from all around the world, too.
Well, it wasn't very scientific. It was kind of more this, if the story really spoke to us. And we were working with NPR correspondents and different producers around the country, and everybody seemed to have a story that they thought they wanted to pursue. And we also opened up a phone line. We've done this with a lot of our projects over the years, and it just opens up a whole world that we could never anticipate. And for instance, one of the calls that we got was from South Dakota, from a young woman who wanted to tell us about a Yankton Sioux coming-of-age story. They have a ceremony along the banks of the Missouri River, and it was a wonderful message, very interesting, but it was also something about the way the woman told the story over the phone to us that just sort of really captivated us and pulled us in. She was very hesitant and nervous that maybe her elders wouldn't approve if she invited us, and she had to ask permission, and she did ask permission, and we did go, and it was really a phenomenal 4-day ceremony where these young girls, many from very hard circumstances, are brought by these grandmothers and aunties and women in the group, and they spend these 4 days on the banks of the Missouri. First, they have to raise a teepee themselves, and these girls have never even thought about that before, and they have to build their lodge.
How old was she?
The girl who called was about 18, but she had been through the ceremony, and her mother was one of the women who had kind of reactivated this ceremony. They'd gotten the grandmothers together because the community was falling apart, and they thought that one of the ways to pull the community back together was to start with the girls and give them this experience. And when they're there for 4 days, they can't touch food at all, and they can't feed themselves, and they're fed by their mothers or their aunties for 4 days. And it's a very moving ceremony. At the end, they're taken into the teepee and dressed and washed, their mother or auntie tells them what they were like when they were babies, how perfect they were, and how they've grown into beautiful, strong women, and they're given a new name. And when they come out of the teepee, they're all dressed in beautiful cotton dresses that one of the grandmothers has made. And then they feed the rest of the community the buffalo meat and the berries that they've prepared over the course of the 4 days. Being a mom myself of two girls, I was just very moved by the whole process. And we never really would have been known about the ceremony or been invited if we hadn't opened it up and asked people to, you know, tell us what's important. You know, what are the rituals that are important for your girls, and what should we be thinking about?
It's a wonderful position to be in. That's Nikki Silva. She is one half of the Kitchen Sisters, who's produced stories for National Public Radio. You're listening to Live Cross Currents. So you have a couple of daughters, and I have a daughter, as I mentioned. Her name's Erin. She's 9 years old. And one of the things that I've seen her do is actually become a storyteller herself. And Erin has created a character named Gertrude. And Gertrude is a girl who has a huge spoik that comes out of her hair, and she's always getting in all kinds of mischief. It's really an alter ego for her. So I'm wondering, Nikki, my daughter is a burgeoning storyteller. How about you? Tell me about your origins of storytelling.
Well, I think my origins of storytelling are really being a listener. My mom was a fantastic storyteller. I mean, she could take the most mundane detail and make it into a cliffhanger, you know, and it was always very secretive and just between you and me, and she just sort of sucked me in. She could talk about all the relatives and family and really get me going. And then my grandmother's, Narcissus and Rosebud, my grandmother's, Rosebud was a country western singer. She played on the radio in the 30s in Oakland. She played the ukulele, and my other grandmother, Narcissus, was from Portugal and came over at 13, was married at 14, had 5 kids by 21, and was divorced by 25.
Sounds so almost like a queen termite.
Yeah, exactly. She had a lot of stories to tell and a lot of power. She had a lot of power. So I kind of just inhaled it my whole life, and it's just sort of a way of life, storytelling.
What do you think of having that career that you have now, traveling the world and learning all these intimate stories from people?
It's very much what I feel I was meant to do and love doing, so it's been great.
How did you get involved in radio?
I was kind of railroaded into radio. I was working in a museum in Santa Cruz doing exhibits. I was just out of college, and I was doing history exhibits about the community and talking to a lot of old people. And I got a telephone call one day from a girl named Davia Nelson. And she was working at KUSP, one of your sister stations.
That's right. Now that's in Santa Cruz.
That's
right?
In Santa Cruz, where I still live. And we have your call is on our station.
And it's at our call-in show.
So we are very related. And Davia said that she was very interested in doing oral histories on the radio, and that she'd gone out and talked to all these old-timers, and everybody she was talking to, it seemed as if I had been there just before, asking for their old photographs and their old artifacts to do something with at the museum. And so she came to the museum one day, and we sat out on the porch overlooking the Monterey Bay. And
what year was this?
This was 1979, and we just kind of fell in love. She was a great storyteller, and we talked about our love lives and all the things we dreamed of doing. And so she said, well, why don't we do something? And I said, yeah, let's do some oral histories. And she said, oh, by the way, I'm leaving for 2 months to go do a project about women outlaws of the West, and somebody has to take over my radio show. Will you do it? And so I was sort of thrust in, knowing very little about it, and fell in love with it. One of the best things that happened, both radio and Davia. So.
Fantastic. That's Nikki Silva. She is one half with Davia Nelson of the Kitchen Sisters, who you hear on KALW, and they work with NPR. Now, Nikki, I'd like to hear a bit of a story about WHER, the nation's first all-girl radio station, which existed from 1955 to 1974 in Memphis, Tennessee. So we're going to first, well, why don't you give me just a moment on this, and then we're going to hear a clip from it.
Okay. I think of all the stories we've ever done, this has been the sort of the most ongoing story. We're still a big part of it. Sam Phillips in Memphis, Tennessee, started this radio station in 1955. Sam Phillips is the creator of Sun Studios and discovered Elvis Presley and Howlin' Wolf and Johnny Cash and on and on and on. And he also started the first all-girl radio station in the world. He was quite a radio man and loved radio and loved women. And so this was his sort of dream. It was also kind of slightly a gimmick and a novelty in the beginning. There was the world's first all-black radio station in Memphis at the time, and the market was just flooded with stations, so he had to figure out a niche. So this was his niche. And when we started doing Lost and Found Sound years ago, we came on this story and began trying to track down the women that made up this station for 20 years. And we found 20 of them. And it's become this kind of quest for us. We're still working on it and actually working on a book. But it's when we talk about beginnings for us, this is just sort of the beginnings of women in radio in a big way and sort of our foremothers. So.
Fantastic. Well, we are going to hear a clip from Sam Phillips, who you were just talking about. And this is from the all-girl station, WHER.
Dottie Abbott, who I hired as general manager, I told Dottie, and she almost shouted, "I don't believe you, Sam. I know you're crazy, but you're not that crazy." You know, I mean, she was just beside herself. You were invading man's territory. I mean, you were supposed to be a guest or something if you're going to do anything as a woman on radio.
This is WHER Radio, America's first all-girl radio station for sparkling.
There just weren't many women's voices back then. Maybe some of the radio stations would have one woman who worked there.
That's a clip from Nikki Silva and Davia Nelson's story about WHER, the first all-girls radio station. So we heard there about not being many women's voices back then. Tell me something about some of the roots of women in broadcasting.
Well, I mean, there were a few, but they came on sort of as special guests or little novelty acts. And WHER, as I said, it sort of started out in a jokey way. They were in one of the first Holiday Inns, and in this tiny little studio that was painted all pink and plush and with mirrors all around, and the air studio was called the Doll Den, and they had a little clothesline with women's nylon stockings and girdles and underwear hanging, and and the women.
Why?
This was the way they got the attention, and Sam Phillips. It was great because he invented rock and roll, discovered it, and he wouldn't allow them to play any of his rock and roll music. It was all the beautiful music, a man singing to a woman or a woman singing to a man, like, album music, Mantovani and Jackie Gleason and Peggy Lee. And it started out that way, but, the women were really doing a job, and they took all the jobs at the station. They were selling the ads. They were doing all the programming, being their own engineers. And
what year was that again?
1955 and until 1974. And what happens is the history of the station really paralleled what was going on in the world and in the United States and culturally with the civil rights movement, with the women's movement, and certainly in Memphis when you look at their story. And it's really a big turning point when Martin Luther King is assassinated in the garbage strike, and suddenly these girl disc jockeys, as they were referred to, kind of turn into reporters. And people from all over the world are calling this station to get news about what's going on in Memphis. And you really see this transformation. The kind of the irony of the whole story is that in 1973 or so, when the women's movement is finally kicking in, the powers that be decided to change the call letters to WWEE, We Radio. They brought in men, and the women became the sort of sidekicks again, which is...
It's kind of funny they called it We
Radio. We Radio.
Like small. That's Nikki Silva. She is one of the Kitchen Sisters, who you hear on public radio. I love hearing the stories about your travels around the world and the intimate stories that we don't really get to hear about. I was wondering if you could tell me about a voice that comes in your mind now and then, somebody who you met who had a really extraordinary voice and story to tell? There's so many, I know, but if there's one that kind of pops into your head.
Well, you know, I'm going to say this. Sam Phillips, that we just heard, was such a genius and such a teller. I think Davia would probably agree with this as well. I mean, we went to interview him several times, and he was one of those people where you would barely ask the first question, and he'd talk for 4 hours without letting you get a word in edgewise.
It's really hard to edit.
It's
that.
Very hard to edit. But, you know, the miracle was he would always come round. He would always come round to sort of the punchline at the end of the joke. It just took him hours to get there. But he's the one that just kept saying, "You go, girls. You know, you go. There's something about the voice. You've got to go find it. You've got to go, you know, work with this radio and share these voices." He was so encouraging. And I think in some ways it was Sam Phillips for me.
Fantastic. That's Nikki Silva. She is one of the Kitchen Sisters. So that actually brings us around to the end. And I want to go back to the beginning again. And I want to know, how does that termite story that we were hearing from, how does that one end?
I'm glad you asked that. So she's deep inside this termite mound and laying all these eggs, and she's in this kind of bomb shelter that's created around her by her children. She's so large now that she can't get out. She's stuck. And when she has these little bitty, you know, when she started out she had wings, but they're now chewed off, and she has these little bitty legs, and she's just pulsating and exudating, and she's kind of like this this sort of living ovary is what she is.
It sure is.
Exactly. And pulsing ovary. And then when she sort of reached her limits and her time about 15 years later, her children gather around, and it's said that they lick her to death and kind of extracting the juices, and it's kind of a sad story, but anyway, it's kind of the end of a cycle.
Yeah, wow. Well, we have a final clip from that termite story.
But one thing I should say, at the start of the story, you hear about the nuptial flight. All these babies that she's given birth to, some of them are called alates, and they can reproduce. A lot of them can't, but there are males and females that can. And they sprout these wings. And on one night a year, on this very warm, certain night, they come out of the termite mound, and they just fly and fly, and they land. And then a male finds a female, and they rip off their wings, and they crawl down into the earth, and they're never seen again. So that's the beginning of the story. And here's the end of the story.
Licked to death.
Licked to death. But then...
All right, well, let's hear one more clip from The Secret Life of the Termite Queen.
There's this interesting question. Is she in charge, or is she, in fact, the captive slave, the ultimate queen mother who's sacrificed everything for her children and the mound?
As the queen dies, the workers often seem to not know what's happening. She gradually turns still, and they still don't have a clue. They circle her body. They keep tending her, cleaning her, waiting for eggs. The queen is their mother. She is their god. They have formed their whole identity around her health and safety. Once she's gone, life does not make much sense. Gradually, they die out. What they leave behind them is this immense shell, this city, this huge mound. It's possible that it's repopulated by her offspring, the young queen she sent out earlier. That starts the cycle anew.
That's the work of Nikki Silva. Thank you so much for the inspiring work, and thank you for joining us this evening.
Thank you for inviting me.
All right. Nikki Silva is one half of the radio production dynamic duo, The Kitchen Sisters, along with Davia Nelson. You can find Nikki's current NPR project, The Hidden World of Girls, online at kitchensisters.org. This is Cross Currents, live from the Polish Club in the Mission District of San Francisco. My name is Ben Trefney. Our final story tonight is about a book that showed up one day in our newsroom. Actually, our friend Annette Bistrup found it.
It was really a very beautiful thing to behold.
And when you open this book up, you see these really fantastic images of hearts. Hearts made of flowers, hearts made of toothbrushes, hearts made of figs, hearts made of anything. The photo book was called Monday Hearts for Madeline. Paige Hodel is the artist. She lives in Oakland.
And the whole essence of the book is the art.
And why Paige Hodel chose to dedicate her life to making these hearts.
And I think it was shortly after that I came to you to propose you to make a story out of this.
That's right. I pretty much just opened up this book right here.
Pretty much just opened up the book and right away said, yeah, this is a good story.
This is Monday Hearts for Madeline. Here we go. This is the love song of Paige Hodel and Madeline Rodriguez.
We met when Lila James' first record came out. That became our song, kind of. It's called When You Love Somebody. What
is a woman? Paige is a DJ. About 6 years ago now, she moved to Oakland, to a bungalow in the city's Laurel District. She noticed one of her neighbors, and she kind of liked her. So she decided to knock on her door.
And we fell just really instantly in love. I just knew right away. As soon as she opened the door, I knew right away.
How'd you know?
I don't know. It's so hard to put a word. It's so hard to put words on that. But there's just a feeling when, you know. And of course, as I got to know her right away, I felt like I was home. I loved you and all of you. The things you do when you love somebody. We used to joke about how she's the quietest person on the earth, and I'm the loudest person on the earth because I'm a disc jockey. You can't get a louder profession than a librarian. You really can't get a quieter one.
And even though it was love at first sight, the DJ took the time to court the librarian.
You know, right away, I mean, even after our first date, I left her something on her doorstep the next morning, a little lunchbox with a little note and some chocolates in it. And I don't know exactly what gave me the idea to leave her a heart, but several weeks later, maybe. I don't know exactly what point it was, but I just was, you know, in my garden one day, collecting things or doing, you know, cleaning or something, and pulled out some of the flowers, and I thought, I'm going to go over there and just leave a little heart on her doorstep. So I just made a heart out of some of the flowers that were in my garden that I had cut. She must have said something that alerted me that she really liked it. And so I had the idea, I'm going to do it every Monday. I'll just start every week for her.
Paige worked as a DJ on Sunday nights. So when she got off work in the wee hours, she'd tiptoe across her lawn and make this little ritual of leaving Madeline a heart to wake up to on her front porch.
You know, I just was so incredibly in love. My heart was just completely exploding open, and I just couldn't contain it. You know, when you feel that feeling in your life and in your body and your soul, you know, it's a really extraordinary feeling. And I just I wanted to make sure she knew.
About 7 months passed after that first date. There were seven glorious and ecstatic months. And then
you know, put her hand to her side one day and said, I have a very strange pain. And we knew something was going on, but certainly not the extent of it. And within a couple of weeks, she was diagnosed with very, very end stage, stage 4 ovarian cancer. I I made a heart for her the night before she passed, and I made two hearts together. I made two hearts so that she would see the two of us together. I don't want that story to end. You know, that story was really important to me, and I don't want it to ever end. During the period of time right after she passed, I just couldn't do really much of anything at all. But I knew I could always make her a heart. That I could always do that. And that really gave me, I think, something to hold on to.
Paige took me to a parking lot of a church near downtown Oakland. She saw a tree that inspired her to make a heart. What you are hearing is her up on a ladder, clipping off branches covered with green acorns and putting them into a bucket.
When somebody dies, you're asked to process something that you can't process, that you refuse. Your heart and soul refuses to say goodbye to someone you love, you know. Even with the nuts and bolts of, well, what the hell? I mean, you know, how could she be here? This person is a human being that I love, and then the next day she's not. Like, where did she go? Like, you know, where is that? Where is that, you know? I want to know where she went. She's my lover. And these trees have the answer. Wherever she went is the same place that made these trees.
Paige says she's become much more in touch with nature since Madeline passed.
These acorns have a job. They hold this little seed, and they have this magnificent job. They're just divine. And so was she, you know? And I just sort of feel like being close to nature has somehow allowed me to somehow stay close to her, because I don't know where she went, but it's probably the same place where these trees are, and the shells on the beach, and the sand on the beach, and the water and the ocean. And it's really, I think it's, I've held on to that for dear life, literally.
About 4 or 5 months after Madeline passed away, Paige was still making hearts for her every Monday. At first on Madeline's doorstep, and then on her own, and then out in the world, leaving them for other people. And then one day,
I don't know what the impulse was, but I sent it to a friend of mine, just a really dear old friend, on my cell phone.
A photograph of a heart.
And she called me back, and she was crying. And I said, What's going on? And she goes, that picture is so beautiful that you sent. And then she said, I don't know how to really explain it, except that I can feel love in this picture. I can feel like little love vibrating off my phone screen. And I just, you know, I got goosebumps everywhere. And I thought, wow, maybe I should put this out in the world.
Her idea at first was to send a new heart to loved ones every Monday and for them to pass them on to their loved ones in turn. But she didn't realize what reaching out like that would do. And something remarkable happened.
I started getting emails from people all over the world. You know, people in South Africa. The hearts are going in Scotland. They're going to Australia. And people, strangers that I don't know, are sending me these just beautiful emails. And people were sending me hearts. People were making hearts on the beach for me and sending them back to me. I never imagined that would happen. Just unbelievable kind of flowing of love. You know, this really tangible love.
So the materials kind of will talk and tell me what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are.
Paige took me back to her home, and in her breakfast nook, she stood with those acorns at a butcher block table bathed in sunlight.
So what I inevitably do is... it's to allow the materials to speak. I'll inevitably end up spending an hour or two just kind of playing with these little acorns. And what do you think about when you're just doing something really mundane over and over? You just start thinking about life and pondering, you know, analogies and metaphors and kind of learning. It's still very, very, very fresh.
At some point, one of Paige's emailed hearts for Madeline ended up with an agent in New York who contacted her right away saying she really should make a book of these.
And I initially said no, It was way too soon after Madeline passed. I had never even fathomed that this was going to be in the public, you know, per se. The intention was so very private and very, but when I started putting them out in the world through the internet, I started sort of getting this kind of awakening that, you know, maybe this was, you know, part of Madeline's and my purpose. You know, maybe this is why she and I met, so that, you know, I don't know. It's, you just sort of, I mean, you think all sorts of things, I guess. But I just sort of had this this kind of awakening and said, you know, why not?
In Paige's kitchen, the heart she was making started to take shape. Paige had about 100 acorns spread out on her dining table, and she was moving them around.
I'll just sort of start messing with them, and all of a sudden it's just sort of like... It's like they all just sort of, like, you know, when you run a magnet by something and they all go, they all just sort of fall where they're supposed to fall. There's so much wisdom in the nature. There's so much wisdom.
Paige made that book. It's called Monday Hearts for Madeline. She sends some of the proceeds to the Women's Cancer Research Center in Oakland, which cared for her partner. And today, more than 1,700 people receive Paige's weekly emails, the Monday Hearts. And many of them send hearts right back to her. So that gift Paige Hodel sends out to the world, that gift comes back to her in abundance.
You never know how far it really goes. Kindness, you know, putting goodness out in the world. You know, really, it does a lot. So we're all putting a little bit of love out there.
At the end of Paige's book, after 100 photos of hearts, hearts made of fuchsias, hearts made of camellias, hearts made of candy corn and Christmas lights, there's a poem. No Monday will there ever be, from now until eternity, that you don't have a heart from me. So Paige Hodel will keep making Monday hearts for Madeline Rodriguez, and in making them for her, she makes them for the world. So this love story doesn't end. Thank you. To see more of Paige Hodel's hearts, visit mondayheartsformadeline.com. And if you'd like to have a heart delivered to you in your inbox, you can sign up to have your email address over there at the KALW table in the lobby. If you want to make Monday Hearts an official part of your home, you can find Paige's book on Amazon. The Women's Cancer Resource Center in Oakland gets proceeds from every sale. And that's it for today's Cross Currents from KALW News, live from the Polish Club in San Francisco. The team includes Hannibal Diaz, Hanna Baba, Ali Budner, Rena Palta, Rob Gettler, Casey Miner, Julie Kane, Stephen Short, Jamie Katsoufis, Yulia Lundberg. And today's show was produced by the truly extraordinary Erica Mu, the marvelous Martina Castro, the awesome Audrey Dilling, and it was engineered by that guy there, Seth Samuel, the fabulous Holly Kernan as our news director. Cross Currents theme music is provided by Oakland's John Santos Quintet. A special thanks to engineer Chris Hoff for his reporting prowess, and thank you to the Polish Club for having us. Also to the Mission Arts and Performance Project, and thanks to all of you. We are listener-supported radio. You're listening to local blues guitarist Quinn DeVoe. His music creates a dance floor between the new hard times and the sweet old times. It's New Orleans soul and early blues, and it's contagious. You'll find out. For KALW News, live from MAP, I'm Ben Trefney.
Hope y'all don't mind. I'll bring my friend McLeet Hedero up here, do a song with me. Just one. Is that all right? Cool.
My neighborhood. my